Morning. May we realize the Tathagata's true meaning. Things just as they are. What do they mean? I was thinking that as I was doing the three bows just now. Maybe it's because I've spoken to a few of you recently who are very new to Zen practice and to the tradition that we have here. And so when you see someone bowing to a wooden statue of a person holding a sword, you might think, ooh, that's a bit odd. So it just occurred to me, I wanted to start off by saying, you know, it's in many traditions, when you're bowing to an image, that is about adoration or respect to the image. In our Zen tradition, it is about becoming one with the energy of what the image is representing. So if it's a Buddha, it's becoming one with the energy of being awake. So it's not two. It's becoming one with. And so in this case, because it's Manjushri Bodhisattva, traditionally the image that is in all the zendos as opposed to the Buddha halls. Now, if we were a very wealthy Zen center, we would have another building, would we? The Buddha hall. We'd all walk over there to do our services, and then we'd be doing just our sitting here in our zendo. So what we have here is a Manjushri that is our, is what is in all the zendos. Manjushri is the energy of cutting away your delusions. So that's what the sword is about there. And the version that we have is not as dynamic as you see in some of the Tibetan versions. It is a 19th century Chinese version of Manjushri. But what's interesting about this Manjushri is that not sitting cross-legged. You know, in Japan, they're usually riding on a lion. But this one's sitting on a chair. And that represents the ability to jump up at any moment and help out, help you by cutting your delusions. So that's why I don't feel embarrassed by putting my head down and saying, I want to be one with that energy that is so strong, that is just ready to cut away my own delusions and delusions of the world around me that are harmful and therefore helpful. So that just struck me this morning as I was bowing. And here it is. This is February? Question mark. Seasonal change. So in this little place that I walk by on the way here, the green is coming up out of the soil about this high now. You know, it's and at the same time, there's the political changes that are going on that are just so disturbing to most of us. And if you're not disturbed by them, then I'm disturbed by that. And we must talk. Because I need you to raise my consciousness a little bit. I feel like I've been awakened out of a dream. A dream of progress, slow, not moving as fast as I might have liked, not perhaps as skillful in certain areas as I might have organized if I were in charge of the world. But I was sure that we were moving in a direction of compassion and progress and a more egalitarian view of the world. But now I don't feel that way. I feel I'm concerned. There's so many changes going on. And I can't even count on February being a cold and snowy month. Or on the U.S. government being temperate. Or reliable. So I think probably I just, because I know most of you here, most of us are really very frightened by what we are perceiving are these aspects of fascism that are arising in our place where we live, where we are citizens. And we can't think that we're not involved because just by virtue of the fact that we are thinking about it, we are involved. We are part of it. And the fact that we're talking about it to one another also means that we are involved. And being involved means we have responsibility. So how do we respond? There are a lot of people who are very angry and who are reacting with a lot of kind of violent hatred towards whomever they decide or the other. And then I also am seeing that there are those that just can't tolerate any of this and are retreating into a very small, narrow space in which it's only about their own inner life, because they cannot tolerate what's the media storm and all that's going on. So naturally, I wonder how our Zen practice can help us at this kind of time. And how, you know, more closely, how our study text for this Ango can serve us. Can it serve us at all, or are we just reading some 9th century, you know, arcane document? So a few of you are new here. We are studying Dongshan's Dual Mirror of Awareness during this period of intensive practice that we're engaged in, the Ango period. And most of the people who've been giving talks have looked at different couplets or different parts of the verse of the Jewel Mirror of Awareness in order to offer some guiding words about our practice, what our practice is about, and how it can help us in our life. And you may recall that the poem itself is about the relationship of what we tag as the relative, meaning our ordinary lives, and the absolute, our lives interconnected with all of life that ever has been, with the big thing, the everything, oneness. So the individual and the many, the oneness, the everything. And it's important to know also that that's through time. So it's not just our relationship to everything that is right now, but everything that ever has been. And actually what will be. So the first line of it is the Dharma of thusness. So the teaching of thusness, or other people translated it as it isness, things just as they are. What is the teaching, you know, like today? February 2017, what is the teaching? I mean, wouldn't it be interesting to just completely miss that? All this is going on, it's like, oh, there's a teaching here. So, this vastness of, you know, I wouldn't even say humanity, I would say all of life that has ever existed, is so huge that we really can't comprehend it. We can And people talk about it, and verses are written about it, but, you know, occasionally, possibly in your zazen, you have a moment of awareness of your of that aspect, but it's not really something that can be spoken about, which is what this verse talks about, actually. It says that we can't really comprehend it through words. So you may have a sense of it in your body, but that's not something that we would that we can put a label on. Because the minute we put a label on it, we freeze it. So the jeweled mirror says, touching away, turning away and touching are both wrong, for it is like a mass of fire. So it says this understanding of oneness, of thusness, is like a mass of fire. Or another translation is like a fireball. So, and then it says, turning away and touching are both wrong. Well, of course, right? A mass of fire, if you can imagine it, is constant motion, explosive, and untouchable, too hot to touch, but brilliant, creating light, so much light that you can't turn away from it. Being that close to clarity keeps us warm, keeps us alive. But it can be dangerous to fall into. To lose oneself in the idea of absolute reality, you know, is dangerous. You're no longer able to cross the street. Get on the subway. There is a difference between you and the subway car. So the mass of fire is, I think, in a way, the wisdom of the jeweled mirror. It is the wisdom of our relation to the wholeness. And if we look too closely, if we go get too close, the self gets burned up. And the individuality and ability to function gets burned up. But without it, without that light, without that burning, we're lost in a dark space. So we need it, but we can't get too close. Thus, turning away and touching are both wrong. So, another way to look at this, and it has been looked at this way through time, is as a warning against using language to understand what cannot be understood, the ineffable, the inexpressible. But I'm going to ignore that warning, and I'm going to get a little closer to the mass of fire here. Just to extend my metaphor a little bit into our lives now, our lives in the world, into how we live and function, you know, as a friend, a lover, parent, child, co-worker, Sangha member, all the ways that we are, and as a citizen. You know, a citizen is just someone who lives somewhere. That's what it means. It's a, you know, I'm a citizen, citizen of the Sangha, I'm a citizen of New York City, I'm a citizen of United States of America. Why is that hard to say? I'm a citizen of the world, citizen, the universe, citizen of thusness. Where the citizen lives is where the citizen finds its mass of fire. So we're faced, you know, whether we're looking at it from a personal point of view or from a point of view of a citizen, is how do we function? How do we be with what is arising in front of us? A mass of fire of the absolute nature of reality, or the mass of fire of this historical time, this place and its needs. If we are to turn away, we'll be ignoring the suffering that is arising. If we turn away, we're turning away from what is. And we know that it's our responsibility to speak up. To speak up for the rights of others, for the health and well-being of others, for the health of this planet. It's February. I was wearing my summer pants yesterday. The health of this planet, where the deserts are inundated with water, flooding. Turning away and touching are both wrong. For it is like a mass of fire. So when I first hear this, I think of touching as a positive thing, as a way to reach out and to help, to touch. But you can also see that touching as an objectification of the other. Rather than recognizing my identity with the mass of fire, in which case I won't be touching it because I am it, I turn it into an object that I'm going to touch. So in a way that touching can be represent a way of othering the mass of fire. You know, in the history of the world, it seems there are countless, countless times of creating an other. Based on geographical location, on language, on religion, political affiliation. Those are the other. And thus we have war and violence and suffering. So I do see this as, it's a stretch, but I see these parallel meanings in the jeweled mirror of awareness. So on the one hand, the mass of fire is inexpressible, and that's why you can't touch it, because if you touch it, you'll get lost in it. You'll burn up. And secondly, in our ordinary lives, we're always faced with the question of whether to look away from suffering or to turn toward it and to act. What would it be like to neither turn away nor touch? Not to create an other of it, but not to ignore it, the suffering that is there. To be intimate. Intimate means one with. When you're one with, you don't other something because you are one with it. To be one with the mass of fire. To maintain and realize that there is that duality, and yet we are awestruck by the reality. So that would be like in our regular spiritual lives to practice intimately now. We need to immerse ourselves deeply into this observation that we are part of the non-dual. We are one with that mass of fire. Nor can we lose ourselves in it. So that's what we call the middle way. That's sitting zazen, walking kinhin, breathing oneness, immersing ourselves in that vast reality that there is. And in our ordinary lives, functioning skillfully, like what I now calling a bodhisattva citizen. We do that by not ignoring the suffering around us, nor by objectifying or othering the suffering we see. It's not over there. You know, a bodhisattva is dedicated throughout the history. It's a being that is dedicated to awakening others, to serving and eliminating suffering. Now, throughout all the Mahayana history, it is the bodhisattvas who stand up and offer themselves, their work, their tools, their presence, to stop the suffering around them. And they always respond with whatever tools they have at hand. If they are artists, they use their art form. They're musicians, they use their music. Their neighbors or cooks, people at a cafe. I mean, the young man that stood up and was shot the other day in Kansas, that stood between the gun and the other man. I mean, that is a bodhisattva. He didn't think about it. He didn't have time to think about it. He had the spirit of a bodhisattva and thus saved the life of the other man. We can make a difference, each of us, in small ways and in big ways. Sometimes for us it's just to offer a seat on the subway, to support someone who looks like they need supporting with a dollar or a smile. So when I talk about a bodhisattva citizen, I'm thinking about the problems in our troubled world. And some of us who are not used to speaking up, speaking to power, have to do that now. And there are all kinds of tutorials out there. I just saw yesterday there's an app on your phone that you can put all your representatives' phone numbers in, and then you can just poke on that, on that, and then they're calling, and then pops up on the app what you can say, how to start it out, right? Because so many of us are like not used to doing that, and we've got a little bit of like nervousness about that. I mean, we can go to a demonstration because we're with a lot of other people, but when we're by ourselves with our phones or with our letters, we might need a little extra support. So this is like some technological support. I think that's great. But that's a bodhisattva. Think, who thought of that? Who created that app? Who thought, oh, we could do this. We could figure this out and help people. The bodhisattvas are everywhere. We have the bunch of letters there that we're still sending to try to the probation, to the parole board for Judy Clark. And a bodhisattva has created a bunch of sample letters for you so that you can just sign the letters and address them. I think that's real bodhisattva action. And as I look around, I see so many of you that I know are involved in bodhisattva actions having to do with the prisons, the solitary confinement, the demonstrations at the airports, demonstrations at Schumer's office. There are people that are involved, that are sitting in this room right now, that are quite involved in a lot of different aspects of standing up and being bodhisattva citizens. It's crucially important at this time to make a change, to change what we see is happening, that is filled with a quality of othering that we haven't seen in the world in 25 years. We have to be aggressive about this, you know. We come here to sit zazen and face the wall and calm ourselves, but we need to also activate ourselves. And I think it's so important to use this sangha and this community as a place of refuge so that you can calm yourself enough so that you can act appropriately without hate, without othering those who may not agree with you. But you use the precepts, use the four vows that you chant every time you end a sitting here. Vow to save all sentient beings. Vow not to hate, but to serve. It's crucially important. Let me end with a gatha about the mass of fire. The fire lights the way. Too close it burns you. Turning away, you lose it. Being the fire, you are warm, and you warm the cold and the suffering.